have trouble sometimes with the telephone. I forget to call Lori to get the box fixer to check it out because there is static on the phone call part of the program. But we do take telephone calls for the next 25 minutes at 375-3082 to talk about whatever you feel like talking about in terms of material that I cover on this program. This evening I heard on the radio coming over that the president has asked for war powers to send troops to Chad. I wonder how you feel about that one. Do you approve of that, sending troops all over the world and keeping us in perpetual motion with war all over the world? There's a gentleman who called here Saturday, maybe he's called other times too, to complain about Mae Brussels. He doesn't like the program. And Eleanor said that she explained to him that there are other programs he can listen to. There's a big variety of programs, and he appreciates the music. He called her. She has German music and is German, and maybe he thought she'd be sympathetic to his viewpoint because I attacked the Nazis and Fritz Kramer and the Nazi conspiracy with Klaus Barbie and the CIA and Reinhard Gehlen, and he doesn't like that kind of talk. We have that kind of problem with the program of World Watchers that was called Dialogue Conspiracy. When I was doing programs in New York, when the Watergate story broke, it was very popular for 3 years to have the program that I had here live on the air played in various cities around the country, and particularly in WBAI in New York, and with Bob Fast. And when Richard Nixon was having trouble in Watergate, and Robert Haldeman was going out, and John Mitchell, and the whole cabinet was being moved out, there were 3 years of interest. But when the solid question came in after Gerald Ford was president and he was on the Warren Commission and Nelson Rockefeller was vice president and he had funded George de Morenschild, Lee Harvey Oswald's close associate, with notes from the Rockefellers, with money in Mexico and Central America. When I got to the Nazi connections, I used to get calls, the station got calls, what are you saying on this station? This is listener sponsored. And they got very, the man kept calling and got very angry, and it wasn't long then that the Village Voice had a story about me and Bob Fast, and Bob was fired from BAI, and I was taken off the air, and a lot of the New York listeners knew where to find me, and a lot didn't know where to find me. Well, I talked to Bob this week, and they keep calling in New York. He's back. He was fired. He fought the case and went to court. It took him years to get back to the station, and he's back there 3 hours a week, and I talked to him this week. And people are still asking, where is Mae Brussels? Everything she said was going to happen has happened. It's exactly like she said. They were looking for Nelson Rockefeller to be president. They didn't believe at all that Ronald Reagan would be president. So we're going to begin tomorrow night doing live telephone calls, and then they'll get cassettes that are taped off the air here. So we'll be back along with other stations around the country with New York City. So for the people that scream and yell that they don't like it, and there's only one man in particular, those of you that like this kind of broadcasting or appreciate it, call this station during the daytime, 375-3082, or send a note or send a dollar or $5 or your subscription for $15 and say we don't appreciate this man can do something else for 1 hour a week. I'll take a call here. Hello?
Hello, May. Calling from Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz, okay.
Yes. Did you see the All the President's Men? It was on one of the...
It was on last night. No, I didn't because I was working and preparing my program for tonight.
Okay,
Sunday night, it's hard on the weekends because I try to collect material during the week and have it as fresh as I can. And so Sunday night is not a TV night for me. What was your opinion of it?
I had never seen the movie.
Did you like it?
And I liked it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think they could have gone into it a little bit more, but it was, you know... You have to entertain people, too.
Well, not only entertain them, but educate them along some of the fields. I have a very close friend who went through the whole Watergate era with me, and she watched it, and she said she even then learned new things all along, and the transition of power was interesting to see certain people leaving, and the, Mr. Klein, these prominent attorneys, saying, we'll get to the bottom of this, and how they promised that they didn't know, and they were all lying, and I think that's very good. To show that they do know and that they lie. And it isn't that everything that people say is always a lie, but it is often true with politicians that it is a lie.
Okay, the second thing was that Seymour Hersh was interviewed by a Pacifica station
mm-hmm.
this week, and they played an excerpt from the interview, and Hearst said that, well, Kissinger was a tote, an intellectual tote boy, and that he said that he, the man's mind is so corrupt that he said it's not even interesting anymore. He also said that Kissinger basically wants to do away with the First Amendment.
He does.
And that's all they played, and that's all I know, but I thought I'd pass that on to
Yeah, I wish he would help me write the book on Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger, because he is totally corrupt, but again, it's where does he get his power, see, and who is giving him the power? If it's Fritz Kramer and the Nazis and Hitler's chief of staff and a warm war criminal, let's get them out.
Yeah, and then in the It Turns My Stomach for This Week department, you know, there's so much, but I think overall... was the coverage of the Senate questioning Mr. Schultz, and it was so maddening to just to watch that, and proving again that Congress has no power. One of the representatives, Tsongas, said that he felt that. Schultz was just let off easily, and it was one of these things. Well, you know, he's so distinguished, and
they can't
why
nail
didn't
him.
You tell us this? And you know, well, you know, Schultz apologized, and it was horrendous. Yeah. You know, well, it's okay, Mr. Schultz. We know you're a great guy. We'll let you off. You know, you didn't tell us, but we know you're sorry, and we know you're well meaning. We believe anything you say.
Yeah, the Congress is so disgusting.
Yeah, and it, like you said, it turns out that Reagan gets anything he wants.
Anything he wants. He blackmails and has things. It's like when Mr. Mullen of the DEA drug department was suggested to be promoted, you know, as head of the drug department, and they put him across the board because at the confirmation hearings of Mr. Raymond Donovan, he admitted that he concealed evidence of organized crime. Well, the guy should have just been kicked in the butt. I mean, what is there that they bring these people back, that they're immune, and they keep resurrecting these old bodies over and over, and that there's never a chance to get new faces? It's like, I want to put on World Watchers later, but I probably won't have time tonight, when the president appoints a committee to investigate organized crime, which is the biggest laugh in the world. He puts Judge Kaufman in the Rosenberg case.
It's a farce.
It's really a farce because of Rosenberg.
They have a chance to nail these people. And
or at least not recognize
they
them.
They just defer to them all the time.
That's right. If there's questions in the history books, and if documents are locked up, of the Rosenberg case, of the prosecutor, whether it was Charles Lindbergh, whether it was Alger Hiss, it's Richard Nixon, put them out like in a farm or people's farm, and just don't give them new appointments if there's extensive investigations of the old one, people like Seymour's doing, you know, years, 5 years of work on Kissinger. Don't appoint Kissinger to a new commission, just let them phase out. But that's impossible because they have too much on the master, and the master has too much on them, so we sink with them.
Yeah, and we watch Congress go through the motions.
And the CIA spends $1 billion a year on news media, so the main newscasters are just pathological liars. So it's really a tragedy how we've gotten there.
Well, and when they die, they give them these wonderful eulogies of how great they were, and they love their family, and they love the government, and they stood for everything this country stands for.
That's right.
And they were great guys, you know.
You know, that's right. The anniversary of the FBI this week, and Ronald Reagan gives a speech. You were just wonderful, and you were so necessary in the 60s. What was Operation Chaos? To give drugs to people to drive them crazy so the doctor wouldn't know it, or to break up marriages, or to forge letters to parents from college kids, and to plant bombs to make them look like they blew up Radical, Isla Vista, the bank, and what was so glorious about the area? Just don't mention the area and say you have survived some scandals to come out on top, and you're the best thing we have, and we're proud of the good things you did. You know, it's like with a family or with children. You don't have to bring up all the bad things, but you don't have to put icing on a cake that's made of cardboard. And that's... Yeah, I was just reading the reason I thought of it is that the government had funded.
I can't remember that. That's a good one.
Well, the government funded a study that Jim Eason mentioned on KGO today on instructions when you receive Valentine's not to eat the box. It cost like $30,000 or $40,000. It was a grant on how to eat Valentine's. It wasn't original. I just heard that today.
Well, maybe the president will decide cardboard is nutritious. Yeah. Maybe we can ship it to third world countries.
Well, it came from trees, and trees are food. I don't know the thinking. Anyway, that's the way. Well, thanks for calling.
Okay, I'll let somebody
okay.
else have a chance.
Bye-bye.
As I said before, if you want and if you appreciate, you know, the broadcast and you want this kind of news, don't forget to write Kazoo, K-A-Z-U, P.O. Box 206 Pacific Grove, California, 93950, or call Lori or call other people that are having programs, 375-3082, and tell them that you want to be able to hear an alternate view of the news and history. And the Mr. Noisemaker, who calls a music program or an opera program to complain about this kind of newscasting, should really be balanced off with people who want to call in or ask questions or listen to 1 hour to some serious discussion. There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle about Stephen Sondheim, my favorite musician, one of my favorite musicians, a reprint, and they left out a good hunk of a section for the New York Times. And Sondheim does amazing things, and he has a new play off-Broadway that's only by invitation. Nobody can see it yet. It's called Sunday in the Park, and he doesn't appreciate the reviewers or the people that are trying to put him down. So he is one of the greatest American geniuses. He's doing this exclusively for a handful of people. And the article in the New York Times was Sunday, July 24th. If you go to the library, you might want to copy it. It's about a new album, a double album coming out of Sondheim's music. There is one album of his music, and then this is, it was called Side by Side. And this album is a new one. And the thing that was interesting to me in the article in the New York Times about this particular album is that they mentioned a song. They go to great lengths. Frank Rich wrote the story about a song called Someone in a Tree. It's from Pacific Overture. And when I was on another radio station, many of you remember that, and I was there 12 years, and a new owner came, and they were ready to turn it to 24-hour hard rock and roll anyway, just about, but I had 1 hour a week on Sunday evening. And the week of May 29th in 1982, I was debating whether to do the full hour of dialogue or whether to put a song onto the program that was apropos of the meaning of what I've been saying on the air, because I was talking about treason and selling this country out, and I was referring to Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer from Germany, who was the godfather, the man behind Henry Kissinger, and trying to trace these people who have really sold this country to fascism as against leading it towards a democracy that would be a beacon for people, a place of hope around the world. And then I decided to put this song on the air because it exemplified the way Japan was sold out by a handful of people in Japan when Admiral Perry came to Japan and made a deal, Commodore Perry, with a handful of Japanese to Americanize it. They also had gunpowder on the boat as they discussed the process. And I decided the song was so appropriate that I put it on the air, and the fellow who owns that station was driving down from Santa Cruz and was furious with the subject and was furious with the song and said, we're rock and roll. We don't have that kind of music. And this was one of the things that really got his dander down. And I think it was interesting that that was what got him so mad, because there's a description of it. And if you buy that album, it'll be out in September. It's Stephen Sondheim's album of music, two records in the album. And the New York Times describes this song, a particular song that the reviewer is fond of. And this is the way they described it. It said, one example of the new record is an 8-minute masterpiece, and it is a masterpiece, called Someone in a Tree from Pacific Overture. Its subject, of all things, is the treaty by which the United States opened up Japan in 1853. That was a long time ago, 1853. And we're 1983, so that's a long, long time ago. But the project and the people and the personalities and the way we move is the same, even though the span of so many years. This reviewer said, because there is no Japanese account, what went on in the treaty house where Commodore Perry negotiated with his hosts from Japan, Mr. Sondheim imagines how four Japanese might speculate years later on how their country was sold out and what happened at that fateful session. Among the characters singing are both an older and a younger boy. The boy was up in the treehouse and heard the conversation, and the older man was under the floor, under the boards, who overlooked the treaty house from the tree. The old man, later, years later, is listening to the little boy tell about that historic day. And this article says, with its ever-shifting perspective on a single event, someone in a tree is literally speaking a mini Rashomon, which is a story told from different viewpoints of what happened when America signed a treaty with Japan. But it is also a metaphysical statement about memory and history and existence. And the quotation, "I'm a fragment of the day," sings the boy about his role when he witnessed the treaty signing, and then says, "If I weren't, who's to say the way things happen here that way?" If he was young, 8 or 9, and he overhears the conversation of Japanese government officials giving his country away to the Americans, "If I weren't there, who's to say what happened there that day?" And then this article says, the music further dramatizes the song's themes by playing its own Eastern trick with time, the old man remembering, the young boy remembering, and extending and compressing a crucial moment in the life of the characters and their civilization. It's like our generation remembers Dealey Plaza, remembers the story of John Kennedy's head going backwards, remembers the discrepancies of the book depository versus the police all running over the grassy knoll and the smoke from the grassy knoll and suspects being taken from behind the fence. When we die off and history tells you that one man named Oswald stood at the window, then history will be rewritten, and that's why eyewitnesses there and people who wrote books right away were important. And if there are no witnesses, who's to say what happened here that day? It says it's amazing that this man can write a piece so sophisticated and difficult as Someone in the Tree. A very nice article about the music of Sondheim, but I'm particularly fond of that song, and I'm glad that it's recognized as a complex Rashomon, because what we're dealing here on this program dealing with is the concept of time, where I will quote for New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or London Times of events that are taking place, and then say a particular man will call the station, "Don't have that on the air, this is terrible, she only looks at the bad, it's only the bad, she doesn't want the good." You can get the good wherever you want. I only talk about the bad because the bad has to be cured. It's a disease. Just like John Dean at the time of Watergate went to Richard Nixon and said there's a cancer on the presidency. There was a cancer, and the cancer had to be solved, even if the president had to be kicked out and tapes destroyed and people killed. There was a cancer, and the cancer grows if you don't stop it at some point when you realize there's a cancer. And the longer you wait, the more difficult it is. So this problem of hearing bad news is something that a particular gentleman doesn't have to hear if he doesn't want to hear it. Now remember, if you want to call 375-3082, if you have any questions, I'll answer them. Otherwise, I brought in some other material that I did want to get caught up with. Last week, a gentleman called me and asked me, was there anything behind the killing on the Georgia Island estate of this gentleman, William Britt Roberts, the fellow who killed him? There were two involved. One is still away, and I hadn't collected much on him yet, but this was a retired multimillionaire, and then the man who killed him drank paraquat and died, and landscaper on the property. Now, the articles that I have about this fellow was that he worked for Chevron Oil, and he was the president of Chevron International, and he worked for Chevron Research Lab in Richmond, California. And he had been active for the international group and in Richmond, California, before he went to Florida to retire. And they are looking for a second man. He was killed in Sea Island, Georgia, last week. And the newspaper article said it appears to be a psychopath, a mental case, because the nature in which the couple was taped, they had heavy tape on them. Now, that to me does not tell me it's a mental case just because they had heavy tape. The mafia and the crime syndicate and organized killers can use that tape. But also this last week, the murder stories came out August the 1st, but July 29th, wait, I'll take a call in 1 minute. I just want to finish this story. There's a story in the San Francisco Examiner. Contractor sues Bechtel Corporation. It says a self-described small company has taken on Bechtel Corporation in a libel case. Bay City's Crane and Wriggling Incorporated has a $100 million suit against Bechtel Corporation, and that's Mr. Casper Weinberger and Mr. Schultz, and Reagan's cabinet are thick with Bechtel. It says that there's a hearing taking place August 17th in Contra Costa County. Bay Cities has 40 employees and $10 million in annual revenue, and they're fighting Bechtel Corporation with $161,000 and $14 billion in revenue. Now, it goes on to say that it has to do it with the Chevron company in Richmond, California. Trent said the Bay Cities completed jobs last fall at Chevron USA with a project with a subcontractor hired by Bechtel. So what I see here is that the news stories of this fellow dying August the 1st, and he died July 31st in Georgia, worked in Richmond, California with Chevron, and in July 29th in the San Francisco papers, there's a lawsuit against a job at Chevron and against Bechtel where the fellow did in fact work. There's a multi-million dollar suit where this fellow did work before he moved to Florida. So the question is, did he know anything? Very often when there is a murder in a city, whether it's New York or Florida or Los Angeles, I find that the same day, somebody who worked at the same time, the same place, has a multi-million dollar lawsuit that will take place. And very often the motive for these murders is to wipe out witnesses to the trial. I'll take one more call before World Watches.
Hello?
Hi, May.
Yeah.
I've got a couple quick questions.
Okay.
First, do you know who took over Reinhard Gehlen's job, actually, when he died, or supposedly died?
Well, Reinhard Gehlen, for listeners that don't know, if there are some that really don't know this, he was chief of Hitler's intelligence, Eastern Division, and then he was knighted by the Vatican and then came to the United States and formed the Central Intelligence Agency, developed from the SS and the OSS into the CIA, and then went back to Germany to be head of the German intelligence. I have the name at home. The BND is the initials for the long German name of German intelligence. He resigned a few years ago and went into the Christian theology and church business for the German CIA.
Uh-oh.
And I'm wondering, with all these huge radio programs that are heavily funded, you know, by the same group, same type of operation, and then he died about 2 years ago. I have the date at home. The organization had many, many people under them. I don't have the names of them, but I have the name of the organization if you want me to bring it in next time. Why did you want to know?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out. It seemed like that was an opening since he was such a key figure over here, regardless of whatever happened over in Germany. I haven't really figured out like who really moved into his shoes or if anyone could.
I don't know, but I talking about that, and along with the line of synchronicity, which happens to me so much in my life, I had Alskis up here from L.A. this weekend, and they were telling me about a fellow named Scott who graduated from Stanford. He got a Ph.D. there, and he had one of these religious churches on the air like Roberts and these various people and Pat Roberts and things, and it was every week talking about the Trilateral Commission and Rockefeller and the Council of Foreign Relations. And about 2 years ago they started a lawsuit to get him off the air when all the other ministers are on, and finally the FCC had a suit and got him off the air. He's now on satellite with his program showing all the background of these various people. And just this last time period, a researcher was down helping him try to find out why he got off the air when the others are on, and that he looked up the trial transcript, and the head of the FCC who got him out was a Nazi war criminal by the name of Baumgarten, and I have his name and his Gestapo number, and he runs the FCC and decides who's on the air. So Gehlen is very much alive, and what his job was to act as a doctor. He's not a doctor, this Nazi, but his Gestapo papers say that he did experimentations on people in the concentration camps. So this fellow called me today about how do I go about to find the background on these Nazi criminals. Do we go to Germany? I think Scott would even pay for him to go to the archive center there. And I said, well, wait a minute. I think I can help you with this case. And maybe he could come here. And I talked about Mr. Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger and go for the Rockefeller trilateral from this end and bring in the Nazi war criminals who they have employed in FCC. So the Gala operation is very much alive. It isn't dead, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Did you actually get through? That was my other question. Did you actually get through to that number in the private sector you were trying to reach Fritz Kramer at?
The where I wrote to him? No, they don't return the call and they don't answer the letter.
What was the name of that company?
Oh, I have it at home. The place where he works, his office. Mm-hmm. I have that at home and the address if you want it. I'll bring it next week if you want.
Yeah.
Do you want me to bring that, and then you call, and I'll bring you his address in Washington if you want to write to him.
Yeah, it seems like we ought to nail that down.
I think everybody should, but maybe if I could get on a satellite program with this Mr. Scott in L.A., that might help.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, he didn't realize that Fritz Kramer was with Klaus Barbie at Oberammergau, the whole network. So if they want to know why a Nazi is working for the SEC and nailing him, we'll go for it.
Is there any other one person that seems to fit in as centrally as Fritz Kramer right now?
Well, there's a lot of them. I'll tell you, I've only got about 10 seconds, so I can't do more. Now, can you call next week and call earlier, and we can discuss the Nazi infiltration in the United States?
Absolutely.
Okay, fine. Okay. Bye-bye. That 25 minutes goes pretty fast, and we can't take more calls because we have to get ready for World Watches, right? So next week we'll do more on... the subject of Nazi infiltration, if it interests you. And in the meantime, call the station and write to the station if you want to express your views that there should be freedom of speech and that this particular person should not worry if he doesn't like the program. He should just do something else for an hour. I'm sure there's something else to do in this beautiful area. So now we'll begin the World Watchers.